What are you up to, Uncle? Excuse me? Ardell asked. Nothing, Maxillium said, dropping the head back to its slumped position. I have to go sit for a portrait. I assume you'll be willing to send me a report once you've detailed all of this?
I can do that, Aradel said.
Good, Maxillium said, walking toward the door. Oh, and Captain?
Yes, Lord Ladrian.
Prepare for a storm. This wasn't done quietly. It was done to be noticed. This was a challenge. Whoever did this isn't likely to stop here.
Part 2 5 Wayne tugged on his lucky hat. It was a coachman's hat, something like a wide-brimmed bowler, only one that didn't have 3 ounces of fancy shoved up its backside. He nodded to himself in his mirror, then wiped his nose. Sniffles. He'd started storing up health the day before, just after finding all those corpses. He already had a nice cushion of healing he could draw upon, tucked away in his metal-mined bracers. He hadn't needed much lately, and always spent days when he had a hangover, as sickly as he could manage, since he was going to have an awful time of it anyway. But the way things smelled, with all those important folk dead, warned him. He'd soon need some healing. Best to expand that cushion as he could. He went light at it today, though, because it was today, a day when he was going to need some luck. He was tempted to call it the worst day of his life, but that would certainly be an exaggeration. The worst day of his life would be the one when he died. Might die today, though, he thought, looping on his belt and slipping his dueling canes into their straps, then wiping his nose again. Can't be certain yet. Every man had to die. He'd always found it odd that so many died when they were old, as logic said that was the point in their lives when they'd had the most practice not dying. He wandered out of his room in Wax's mansion, idly noticing the scent of morning bread coming from the kitchens. He appreciated the room, though he really only stayed because of the free food. Well, that, and because of Wax. The man needed company to keep him from going more strange. Wayne wandered down a carpeted corridor that smelled of polished wood and servants who had too much time. The mansion was nice, but really, a man shouldn't live in a place that was so big. It just reminded him how small he was. Give Wayne nice, cramped quarters and he'd be happier. That way he'd feel like a king, with so much stuff, it crowded him. He hesitated outside the door to Wax's study. What was that sitting on the stand beside the doorway? A new candelabra, pure gold, with a white lace doily underneath. Exactly what Wayne needed. He fished in his pocket. Rich people didn't make sense at all. That candelabra was probably worth a fortune, and Wax just left it lying around. Wayne fished in his other pocket, looking for something good to trade, and came out with a pocket watch. Ah, that, he thought, shaking it and hearing the pieces rattle inside. How long since this thing actually told time? He picked up the candelabra, pocketed the doily underneath, then put the candelabra back in place with the pocket watch hanging from it. Seemed like a fair trade. Been needing a new handkerchief, he thought, blowing his nose into it, then pushed open the door and wandered in. Wax stood before an easel, looking at the large artist's sketch pad he had filled with intricate plans.
Up all night, were you?
Wayne asked with a yawn.
Rusts, Ban. You make it hard to loaf about properly.
I don't see what my insomnia has to do with your laziness, Wayne.
Makes me look bad, Saul, Wayne said, looking over Wax's shoulder. Proper loafing requires company. One man lying about is being idle. 2 men lying about is a lunch break.
Wax shook his head, walking over to look at some broadsheets. Wayne leaned in, inspecting Wax's paper. It held long lists of ideas, some connected by arrows, with a sketch of the way the bodies had fallen in both the ballroom and the safe room.
What's all this, then?
Wayne asked, picking up a pencil and drawing a little stick figure with a gun shooting at all the dead bodies.
His hand trembled as he drew the stick gun, but otherwise it was a right good stick figure.
"Proof to me that a steel runner is involved," Wax said. "Look at the pattern of deaths in the ballroom. Four of the most powerful people in the room were killed with the same gun, and they were the only ones up there killed by that weapon. But it's the same one that killed the guards outside the safe room. I bet those four above were shot first, dead in an eye blink, so fast that it sounded like a single long shot. Thing is, judging by the wounds, each shot came from a different location."
Wayne didn't know a lot about guns, seeing as how he couldn't try to use one without his arm doing an impersonation of a carriage on a bumpy road. But Wax was probably right. Wayne moved down to start sketching some stick figures of topless women in the center of the picture, but Wax stepped over and plucked the pencil from his fingers.
"What's that?"
Wayne asked, tapping the center of the sketch pad where Wax had drawn a bunch of straight lines.
"The pattern the killer used baffles me," Wax said. "The four people in the party he shot, they all fell while in random conversations. Look how they were lying. Everyone else who died was part of the larger shootout, but these four? They died while the party was still going on. But why did he shoot them from different directions? See, best I can guess, he fired first here, killing Lady Lenton. Her dropped drink was stomped on many times over the next few minutes. But then the killer used his speed to move quickly over here and fire in another direction. Then he moved again and again. Why four shots from different places?
Who was standing where he shot?
The people he killed, obviously.
No, I mean, who was standing near him when he fired his gun? Not who did he shoot, but who was he near when he shot?
Ah, Wax said.
Yep. Looks to me like he was trying to set them all off,
Wayne said, sniffling.
Get everyone in the room shooting at each other. See? It's like how to start a bar fight. You throw a bottle at some fellow and then turn to the person next to you and cry out, "Hey, why'd you throw that bottle at that nice fellow? Rusty looks big, and now he's coming for you and—"
"I understand the concept," Wax said dryly. He tapped the drawing pad. "You might have something."
"It's not catching."
Wax smiled, writing some notes on the side of the pad.
"So the killer wanted to sow chaos. He started a firefight by bouncing around the room, making it look like various parties were attacking one another. They would already have been tense, suspicious of one another."
"Yep. I'm a genius."
"You just recognize this because the killer was making others do his work for him, which is an expertise of yours."
"As I said, genius. So, how are you going to find him?"
"Well, I was thinking of sending you to the village to—"
"Not today,"
Wayne said. Wax turned to him, raising his eyebrows.
"It's the first of the month," Wayne said.
"Ah, I had forgotten. You don't need to go every month."
"I do."
Wax studied him, as if waiting for a further comment or wisecrack. Wayne said nothing. This was actually serious. Slowly, Wax nodded.
"I see. Then why haven't you left yet?"
"Well, you know," Wayne said, "it's like I often say.
Greet every morning with a smile, that way it won't know what you're planning to do to it."
"No, not that one."
"Until you know it ain't true, treat every woman like she has an older brother what is stronger than you are?"
"No, not—" "Wait, I said that?"
"Yes," Wax said, turning back to his notes. "It was a very chivalrous moment for you."
"Rosts, I should really write these things down."
"I believe that is another thing you often say," Wax made a notation. "Unfortunately, you'd first have to learn how to write."
"Now that's unfair,"
Wayne said, walking over to Wax's desk and poking around in his drawers.
"I can write. I know four whole letters, and one's not even in my name."
Wax smiled.
"Are you going to tell me what you always say?"
Wayne found a bottle in the bottom drawer and lifted it up, dropping in the lace he'd taken from outside as a replacement.
"If you're going to have to do something awful, stop by Wax's room and trade for some of his rum first."
"I don't believe you've ever said that."
"I just did."
Wayne took a gulp of the rum.
"I—"
Wax frowned. "I have no response to that." He sighed, setting down his pencil. However, since you're going to be indisposed, then I suppose I will have to go visit the village.
Sorry. I know you hate that place.
I will survive, Wax said, grimacing.
Want a piece of advice?
From you? Probably not. But please feel free.
You should stop by Wax's room before you go, Wayne said, trailing out toward the door, and pinch some of his rum.
The rum you just pocketed?
Wayne hesitated, then took the rum out of his pocket.
Aw, mate, sorry. Tough for you.
He shook his head. Poor fellow. He pulled the door closed behind him, took a pull on the rum, and continued on his way down the stairs and out of the mansion. Marcy tugged at the collar of her jacket, glad for the seaborne wind that blew across her. It could get warm in her uniform, a proper one today, with a buttoned white blouse and brown skirt to match the brown coat. Next to her, the newsman wasn't so thankful for the wind. He cursed, throwing a heavy piece of iron, it looked like a piece of an old axle, onto his stack of broadsheets. On the street, the traffic slowed in a moment of congestion. Motor car drivers and coachmen yelled at one another.
"Ruin break that Tim Vashon," the newsman grumbled, looking at the traffic. "And his machines."
"It's hardly his fault," Marcy said, digging into her pocketbook.
"It is," the newsman said. "Motors were fine, nothing wrong with them for driving in the country or on a summer afternoon. But they're cheap enough now, everyone has to have one of the rusting things. A man can't take his horse 2 blocks without being run down 6 times.
Marcy exchanged coins for a broadsheet. The yelling subsided as the traffic clot loosened, horses and machines once again flowing across the cobbles. She raised the broadsheet, scanning above the fold for stories.
"Say," the newsman said, "weren't you just here?"
"I needed the afternoon edition,"
Marcy said absently, walking away. "Cry of outrage in the streets," the headline read. "A cry like that of twisting metal sounds through Ellendale as people take to the streets, outraged by government corruption. 1 week after the governor's veto of Bill 775, the so-called Workers' Rights Manifesto, his brother Winston Innate has been found dead after an apparent dealing with known criminals. Winston was killed in his mansion, perhaps a casualty of constable action against these criminal elements. Among the fallen is the notorious Dowser Moline, long suspected of running ore smuggling operations into the city, undercutting the work of honest men. The constables admit no culpability for the deaths, but suspicions about the mysterious circumstances have led to a general outcry." Marcy reached into her handbag and took out the morning edition of the same paper. "Mystery at Lord Winston's mansion," the headline read. "Constables have disclosed that Lord Winston, brother of the governor, was found dead in his mansion home last night. Little is known of the mysterious circumstances of the death, though several members of high society are rumored to have been present." Every other story in the paper was the same in both editions, save for one report on the floods in the east, which had an extra line updating casualty estimates. The Winston story had nudged 2 others off the page, in part because of the size of its headline. The Ellendale Daily was hardly the most reputable news source in the basin, but it did know its market. News stories that people agreed with, or were scared by, sold the most copies. Marcy hesitated on the steps of the 4th Octant precinct of the constabulary. People flowed on the sidewalks, bustling, anxious, heads down. Others loitered nearby, men in the dark jackets of teamsters, hands shoved in pockets, eyes shaded by peaked hats.
"Out of work," Marcy thought. "Too many idle men out of work."
Motor cars and electric lights were changing life in Ellendale so quickly it seemed that the common man had no hope of keeping up. Men whose families had worked for 3 generations in the same job suddenly found themselves unemployed. And with the labor disputes at the steel mills... The governor had recently given political speeches to these men, making promises. More coach lines to compete with rail lines. Going places the railroad could not. Higher tariffs on imports from Bilming. Empty promises mostly, but men losing hope clung to such promises. Winston's death could dash those promises. How would people react if they began to wonder if the governor, Replar Innate, was as corrupt as his brother.
A fire is kindling in the city, Maracy thought. She could almost feel the heat coming off the page of the broadsheet in her hands.
She turned and entered the constabulary offices, worrying that Lord Winsting might actually do more harm to Elendel dead than he had alive, which was saying something. Wax climbed out of the carriage, nodding to his coachman and indicating that the man should continue on home rather than wait for his master. Wax pulled on his aluminum-lined hat, broad-brimmed, Ruff's style, matching his duster, though he wore a fine shirt and cravat underneath. The hat and mist coat made him stand out like a man who had brought a shotgun to a knife fight. Workers passed in suspenders and caps, bankers in vests and monocles, constables in helms or bowlers and militaristic coats. No Ruff's hats. Maybe Wayne was right about that. He never would shut up about the importance of a hat. Wax took a deep breath, then stepped into the village. It had probably once been just an ordinary city street. A wide one, but still just a street. That was before the trees. They sprouted here, pushing cobblestones aside, creating a dense canopy that ran the length of the thoroughfare. It was a place that felt like it shouldn't be. No mere park, this was a forest, uncultivated and unmanicured, fresh and primal. You couldn't bring a carriage or motor into the village, even without the trees. The ground would be too rough now, rolling and uneven. The buildings along the street had been engulfed and became the property of the village. He couldn't help wondering if this was what all of Elendil would be like without the hand of men. Harmony had made the basin ferociously fecund. Men didn't farm here so much as fight to harvest quickly enough. Wax strode forward, arrayed as if for battle. Vindication and his Sterion at his hips, short-barreled shotgun in its holster on his thigh, metal burning inside of him. He pulled the brim of his hat low and entered another world. Children wearing simple white smocks played among the trees. Older youths wore the Tinningdar, the terrace robe marked with a V pattern running down the front. These looked up from the steps of buildings to watch him pass. The air smelled soft here. Soft air. A stupid metaphor, and yet there it was. That smell reminded him of his mother. Whispers rose around Wax like spring shoots. He kept his eyes forward, trudging across the too springy ground. There were no gates into or out of the village, yet you couldn't enter or leave without being identified. Indeed, moments after his entry, a young woman with streaming golden hair was sent running ahead of him to bear news of his arrival. They've found peace for themselves here, Wax thought. They've made peace for themselves. You shouldn't resent them so. After a short walk, he emerged from a stand of trees to find three terracemen waiting for him, arms folded, all wearing the robes of brutes, ferrochemists, who could increase their strength. Their features were varied enough that one wouldn't have pegged them as relatives. Two had the height that was often the terrace heritage, and one had skin that was darker. Some of the originators from ancient terrace had been dark of skin. Wax's own tan probably came from that lineage. None of the men here had the elongated features seen in the ancient paintings. That was a thing of mythology.
"What is it you need, outsider?" one of the men said.
"I want to speak with the Synod," Wax said.
"Are you a constable?" the man said, looking Wax up and down.
Children peeked out from behind nearby trees, watching him.
"Of a sort," Wax said.
"The terrorists police themselves," another of the men said. "We have an arrangement."
"I'm aware of the compact," Wax said. "I just need to speak to the Synod, or at least Elder Vaufendahl."
"You shouldn't be here, lawman," the lead terraceman said.
It's all right, Razal,"
a tired voice said from the shadows of a nearby tree. The three terracemen turned, then quickly bowed as an old terrace woman approached. Stately and white-haired, she had darker skin than Wax and walked with a cane she didn't need. The woman, Vafendal, studied Wax. He found himself sweating. Rizal, still bowing, spoke with a stubborn tone.
"We tried to send him away, Elder."
"He has a right to be here," Vafendal said. "He has as much Terrace blood as you do. More than most."
The Terrace man brute started, then rose from his bow, peering again at Wax.
"You don't mean..."
"Yes," Vafendal said, looking very tired. "This is he, my grandson."
Wayne tipped the rum bottle up and teased the last few drops out into his mouth. Then he tucked the bottle into his coat pocket. It was a good bottle. He should be able to trade it for something. He hopped off the canal boat, giving a wave to Red, the boatman. Nice chap. He would let Wayne bum rides in exchange for a story. Wayne spat a coin out of his mouth. He'd been keeping it in his cheek, and flipped it to Red. Red caught the coin.
"Why is this wet? Were you sucking on it? Alamances can't push on my coin if it's in my mouth," Wayne called. "You're drunk, Wayne," Red said with a laugh, shoving off from the dock with his pole. "Not nearly drunk enough," Wayne called back. "That cheapskate Wax didn't even have the decency to stock a full bottle."
Red turned the canal boat, pulling it out into the waters, wind rippling his cloak. Wayne walked away from the post marking the canal-side mooring and was faced with the most intimidating sight a fellow could see. The Ellendale University. It was time for Wayne's 3 tests. He reached for the rum, then remembered, a little foggily, that he'd finished it all.
"Rust and ruin," he muttered.
Perhaps he shouldn't have downed the whole thing. Then again, it made his sniffles easy to ignore. When he was properly smashed, he could take a punch or two to the face and not even feel it. There was a kind of invincibility to that. A stupid kind, but Wayne wasn't a picky man. He made his way up to the university gates, hands stuffed in his coat pockets. The etched letters over the top proclaimed in high imperial, "Wuzzing the always of wanting of knowing." Deep words. He'd heard them interpreted as, "The eternal desire of a hungry soul is knowledge." When Wayne's soul was hungry, he settled for scones. But this place was full of smart kids, and they were a strange sort. 2 men in black coats leaned casually against the gates. Wayne hesitated. So they were watching for him out front this time, were they? The first of his 3 trials was upon him. Rusting wonderful. Well, after the nature of any great hero from the stories, he was going to do his best to avoid this particular trial. Wayne ducked to the side before the 2 men could spot him, then followed the wall. The university was surrounded by the thing, like it was some kind of bunker. Were they afraid all their knowledge would leak out, like water from a swimmer's ears? Wayne craned his neck, looking for a way in. They'd bricked up the broken part he'd used last time. And the tree he'd climbed that other time had been cut down. Drat on them for that. He decided to follow another great tradition of heroes facing trials. He went looking for a way to cheat. He found Dims on a nearby corner. The young man wore a bowler hat and a bow tie, but a shirt that had the sleeves ripped off. He was head of one of the more important street gangs in the area, but never stabbed people too badly when he mugged them, and was polite with the people he extorted. He was practically a model citizen.
"Hello, Dims," Wayne said.
Dims eyed him.
"You a conner today, Wayne?"
"Nope."
"Ah, good," Dims said, settling down on the steps.
He took something out of his pocket, a little metal container.
"Here now," Wayne said, wiping his nose. "What's that?"
"Gum."
"Gum?"
"Yeah, you chew it."
Dims offered him a piece of the stuff. It was rolled into a ball, soft to the touch and powdered on the outside. Wayne eyed the lad, but decided to try it. He chewed for a moment.
"Good flavor," he said,
then swallowed. Dims laughed.
You don't swallow it, Wayne. You just chew.
What's the fun of that?
It feels good.
He tossed Wayne another ball. Wayne popped it into his mouth.
How are things, Wayne said, with you and the cobblers?
The cobblers were the rival gang in the area. Dims and his fellows went about with their sleeves torn. The cobblers wore no shoes. It apparently made perfect sense to the youths of the street, many of whom were the children of the houseless. Wayne liked to keep an eye on them. They were good lads. He'd been like them once. Then life had steered him wrong. Boys like this, they could use someone to point them in the right direction.
Oh, you know, Dim said. Some back, some forth.
There won't be trouble now, will there?
Wayne asked.
I thought you said you wasn't no Connor today. I ain't,
Wayne said, slipping, by instinct, into a dialect more like that of Dim's.
I'm asking as a friend, Dim's.
Dim scowled, looking away, but his muttered response was genuine.
We ain't stupid, Wayne. We'll keep our heads. You know we will.
Good.
Dims glanced back at him as Wayne settled down.
You bring that money you owe me?
I owe you money?
Wayne asked.
From cards, Dims said. 2 weeks back. Rusts, Wayne, are you drunk? It ain't even noon yet.
I ain't drunk,
Wayne said, sniffling.
I'm investigating alternative states of sobriety. How much do I owe you?
Dims paused.
20.
Ah, see,
Wayne said, digging in his pocket.
I distinctly remember borrowing 5 off you.
He held up a note. It was a 50. Dims raised an eyebrow.
You want something from me, I'm guessing.
I need into the university.
The gates are open, Dims said.
Can't go through the front. They know me.
Dims nodded. That sort of thing was a common complaint in his world.
What do you need from me?
A short time later, a man wearing Wayne's hat, coat, and dueling canes tried to pass through the front of the university. He saw the 2 men in black, then bolted as they chased after him. Wayne adjusted his spectacles, watching them go. He shook his head. Ruffians, trying to get into the university. Scandalous. He walked in through the gates, wearing a bow tie and carrying a load of books. Another of those men, who stood in a more hidden spot, watching his companions chase Dims, barely gave Wayne a glance. Spectacles. They were kind of like a hat for smart people. Wayne ditched the books inside the square, then walked past a fountain where a statue of a lady who wasn't properly clothed, he idled only a short time, and made his way toward Pashadon Hall, the girls' dormitory. The building looked an awful lot like a prison. 3 stories of small windows, stonework architecture, and iron gates that seemed to say, "Stay away, boys, if you value your nether parts." He pushed his way in the front doors, where he prepared himself for the second of his 3 tests. The Tyrant of Pashadon. She sat at her desk, a woman built like an ox, with a face to match. Her hair even curled like horns. She was a fixture of the university, or so Wayne had been told. Perhaps she had come with the chandeliers and sofas. She looked up from her desk in the entryway, then threw herself to her feet in challenge.
You!
Hello,
Wayne said.
How did you get past campus security?
I tossed them a ball,
Wayne said, tucking the spectacles into his pocket.
Most hounds love having something to chase.
The tyrant rumbled around the side of her desk. It was like watching an ocean liner try to navigate city canals. She wore a tiny hat in an attempt at fashion. She liked to consider herself a part of Ellendale upper society, and she kind of was. In the same way that the blocks of granite that made up the steps to the governor's mansion were a part of civic government.
You,
she said, spearing Wayne in the chest with a finger.
I thought I told you not to come back.
I thought I ignored you.
Are you drunk?
She sniffed at his breath.
No, Wayne said. If I were drunk, you wouldn't look nearly so ugly.
She huffed, turning away.
I can't believe your audacity.
Really? Because I'm sure I've been this audacious before. Every month, in fact. So this seems...